Hi, everybody. I am Clara Pei, founder of Unite Food. We are the world's first globally inspired protein bar. We believe that diversity is delicious, and we want to welcome new people into the protein bar category by creating culturally inclusive flavors that are fun and nostalgic, but most importantly, good for you and actually do a job in keeping you full.
Talk to me about, first of all, Claire, great to see you. It's nice. It's weird to see people online for the first time in a while when you used to be somebody I'd see in person all the time. And so
Right.
now it's just like, but we just pick up where we left off. So it's really great to see you again.
Great to see you.
What does globally inspired mean when it comes to your brand?
So, globally inspired is like this white space that I've kind of identified in wellness as a category, but specifically in protein bars. In that most protein bars, that if you are a protein bar eater, like most Americans, come in pretty basic flavors like vanilla and chocolate and maybe a lemon or a blueberry, but there are thousands of options and they're always the same flavor. Being an immigrant, food to me is about flavor and fun and exploration. And I just realized one day I had this aha moment, like, why did I not like protein bars? And I realized it didn't matter which brand I chose, they were always the same. They tasted the same. And so I said, where's the flavor? Where's the fun? And there could be better protein bars. Like, where's the churro flavored bar? And where's the baklava flavored bar? And, didn't see it in the market, didn't see myself represented, and thought, okay, well, I could probably fix this problem. And you know me, Ed, I'm
Yes.
like one of those people who, wants to solve my own problems. And I'm an entrepreneur first for myself and then for
Right.
other people.
Yeah. I love that. So I'm going to go back a little bit. I got a lot of questions for you and I'm really excited about this conversation, but I'm going to go back to a day. It was probably, you probably know when it was because you know where you were in the development of the brand. I'm going to place this somewhere in the middle of 2018 or 19. It was definitely pre-COVID because you launched in March. Great time to March 2020. Heck of a time
Right.
to launch a new product and company, right?
Right.
We're having lunch at the Lazy Dog Cafe, I believe it was in Brea. You were with Easy Flow at the time, your family's business. And I thought we were just having another conversation about how things are going in the family business. How can we help you out? How can the center at Cal State Fullerton be a better resource for you and your family? And then you shared with me this idea. And again, it was probably more than an idea at that point, but it was the first I'd heard of it. Can you take me back to what you remember about that timing and what got you to that point? Because I think at that point, you even maybe had a sample in your purse that you gave me. I seem to remember that anyway. I might be wrong, but I seem to recall
That's funny. That would have been 2019.
Okay.
Yeah, I was definitely on this health and wellness journey, and I was working at Easy Flow, which was a very big part of my life for 17 years, running the family business. I was always really busy, back-to-back meetings. I, was a mom with very young kids at the time. So I always like work through lunch, tried to get out to go grab them before the daycare closed. And like that was always my pickle every single day. It was just really trying to get as much work done before I had to go home and, be with the kids. And so protein bars were my crutch. And so Easy Flow was actually where that necessitated the need that I eat protein bars. And so I always had a drawer full of them and, just never liked them, just saw them as like function and not flavor. And I probably would have taken a pill if I could, like, and
Yeah.
have had the same function. Like, just, it wasn't
Had the
something I
same flavor
enjoyed.
to you, so why, yeah.
Yeah, it was like a vitamin I was taking. It wasn't like something that I enjoyed eating. And so Easy Flow was really the impetus. And so, like, yeah, in 2018, I probably started to like have this like idea and like kind of percolating in my head. And in 2019, it kind of I moved a little bit further by, creating prototypes in my kitchen and then like sampling them with my friends, like the family business group that I was
Yep.
in, or, other peer groups that I was in, and my poor unsuspecting friends, like literally eating baggies of my protein bars and giving me that
Nice.
early encouragement. And then probably, the silver pot samples were probably our first co-man. We had actually made a manufacturable formula or recipe, and I was just kind of testing and seeing, if it would work, and really trying to gather more information.
Talk about that first conversation with Matt, your husband. Hey, honey, I'm going to turn the kitchen into an R&D kitchen for this for a while. How did that go?
He's used to my zany ideas. You know, he knows who he's married to. He's a wise man. But, you know, it was actually Matt's experience with working at NASCAR. So, you know, he was head of the track in Fontana for a very long time. And Fontana has a very large Hispanic demographic, but they saw that, like, there wasn't large Hispanic attendance in their at their races, at their NASCAR races. And I think there was some kind of thought around, well, maybe they weren't interested in racing or didn't want to go to the races. And so Matt kind of had a hypothesis that, like, hey, if we welcome people in and give them culturally relevant fan experiences and culturally relevant food and culturally relevant bands, then there might be an interest. And within a few years, their fan base was 40% Hispanic, and they would sell out. They would go on and sell out. Is that me?
No. I just had something pop up on my computer. That's okay.
Oh, it's okay.
Yeah.
And so they would go on to sell out that track. And so that was like the early seed that was planted in my head of, like, why don't more companies speak in culturally relevant ways to demographics that are around them? And so that was just, like, kind of in the back of my head always. Like, it always bothered me that, like, you know, that experience that he had always kind of stayed with me. And so when I told him, when I had the aha moment and realized that, like, there weren't cultural flavors in protein bars, I said, I think this could be huge, right? Like, remember, like, when you were at NASCAR and you had, you know, that experience, I think it's the same here. I think it's not on purpose that people have been excluded, but there are people on the margin that haven't been seen in the wellness community, and they're there and they want to participate. And we just have to speak to them in a culturally nostalgic way.
I think that's a great point. I've never thought of it that way, but there's a lot of, we talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion. And obviously the opposite of inclusion is exclusion, but a lot of it's not intentional. It's just an oversight. Yeah. We're not excluding. I'm sure some do intentionally, obviously. And that's why we need to give more attention to it. But most of it's just, you know, you weren't thinking, hey, there isn't a bar like this in the market. So your first flavors that you brought to market were peanut butter and jelly, churro, and Mexican hot chocolate. And I know this from memory because I've got boxes in my house, and, you know, they've become my I won't call it a vice because it's a good thing, but certainly they get me through some of those, you know, between meals, especially. But which one was first, and when did you decide, okay, we're going to stop and go with these three to start? Because I know you've recently added a couple more flavors as recently as within the last few weeks.
I mean, my creativity was just, like, open when I had that aha moment, right? And so I got my Cuisinart out and I tested a million different kinds of flavors, some obscure, some not obscure. And where I landed in kind of picking those flavors was I wanted something that was accessible and, like, culturally nostalgic to a large population of people. So churros were, like, kind of the first one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you don't have to have gone to Portugal, Spain, or Mexico City to have eaten a churro, right? No. Churros are...
Go to Del Taco and get a churro. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. They're across the country and you've had it at a fair or a carnival. And really the unique inspiration for me was at Disneyland, you know, taking my girls and always seeing the long lines at the churro cart. And I was like, that's the flavor, you know? So I knew churro was going to be a flavor because it was fun. It was nostalgic. It hit all those points that I was trying to make. And then chocolate is a really important flavor in protein bars. There's a lot of chocolate protein bars because people want to substitute their candy bar for a protein bar and get, like, that indulgent flavor. So Mexican hot chocolate was, like, my twist on that. Like, you can have chocolate, but let's make it interesting. Let's add a little bit of warming spice and let's make it different than what's out there. And, you know, Mexican hot chocolate is definitely an emerging flavor. I don't think it's, like, as known as it can be. Now there's, like, other competitors who've made Mexican hot chocolate bars, which I think is hilarious that, like, people are jumping onto the bandwagon, but, you know, it doesn't,
that's imitation is the greatest form of flattery, right?
Well, and it really helps to build what our mission is, which is, like, welcoming more people into wellness. So I'm, I'm totally,
bring it on. Sure.
Yeah. I know that we'll always create outstanding products. So Mexican hot chocolate was kind of that, like, chocolate indulgent flavor. And then peanut butter and jelly is the one that people kind of scratch their head about and they go, that's not ethnic or global or worldly or
universal,
whatever.
I think. Well, I don't know, but it sure is in my home.
To me, it was like the quintessential flavor of childhood in America, right? Like, I'd never had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich at home, but at daycare, they would give us peanut butter and jelly on a saltine. And that was like one of our flavors that we would always, Annie, I'm recording a podcast. Sorry.
That's okay.
Sorry, Ed.
That's okay. That's the beauty of doing these things on Zoom, is there's interruptions, and I love it. I usually don't even edit those out because it's just part of
it. So peanut butter and jelly as a flavor was definitely one that, you know, I wanted to honor my American heritage and upbringing as well. So like it was nostalgic to me. And I think it's nostalgic to a lot of people. And we wanted a better for you experience with around a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
What's your favorite?
Oh, that's like, I got that question a lot.
I know, you know, like, which is your favorite child, right?
Exactly right. I mean, I really love our churro flavor. I love them all, but like, I'm really excited about our new flavors, our baklava and our bubble tea, because those are just so different and unique.
Yeah. Bubble tea. I know baklava. I probably have some in my house, or I have bubble tea. I'm not really familiar with that.
So bubble tea is a riff on like a Taiwanese milk tea. So if you've had like the milk with the tea flavor and like the boba bits on the bottom. And so that is definitely an emerging flavor. We're seeing it a lot in drinks and ice cream, but nobody's ever done it in a bar. And we're kind of the first to do it that way.
I love that. When did the idea, so you talked about the impetus of it and you know, going back to, you know, the origins of this. You did your undergrad at USC, Marshall School of Business. Guessing you may have taken an entrepreneurship class or two in that study. I know a bit about that school, having been there myself and also worked there for a number of years. Did you have other entrepreneurial ideas prior to, I mean, I know you were working at Easy Flow for 17 years, and people say, well, are they a family business or an entrepreneurial venture? It's like, my answer is always, well, yes. I mean, you have to be both. If you're a family business, you're also an entrepreneur. But outside of Easy Flow or Unite, have there been other ventures into going out on your own? And if so, what were they?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think every entrepreneur has like tried little businesses when they were like kids, but that irrespective of those, you know, right. I used to try to find leaves and sell them to my cousins. I don't know, just random things. But, you know, I did go to USC Business School, and I actually went undeclared to undergrad. I didn't know what I was going to study. And I found myself at the Marshall School, and I only signed up to do the business track because they had an entrepreneurship program. And that felt more aligned to how I thought about myself. You know, I didn't want to just study one, you know, I didn't want to study accounting or just marketing or just finance. And I felt like entrepreneurship really was more reflective of who I was. And so going through that program, you know, I learned how to write a feasibility study and a business plan. And I actually wrote a business plan then with my best friend for a plus size line of plus size clothing for teenage girls, starting with jeans. And I had graduated in 1999, and my best friend, who I was writing the business plan with, her dad had just invested in a jeans manufacturing plant in downtown LA. So we had the manufacturing partner, and I had done all my research then at the Brea Mall near where I lived.
Right up the street from where I grew up too.
Exactly. And I just put myself in with empathy in the body of like a plus size teenage girl. And I was like, where would you find cute clothes if you're plus size? And there were no plus size clothing stores back then. It was not an emerging anything about it. We knew the demographics were growing. We knew kids were getting more overweight. And that, sadly, that trend has not reversed. Right. And I just wanted to serve these girls. I wanted to help them make them fit in. And so if you were a plus size and a girl back then, you had to shop in the boys Husky department, or you had to shop in the women's department, which was like, you know, not cute, not bedazzled.
Not the fashionable way you wanted to dress if you're a teenage girl.
And so I did all my research, and, you know, being all of 21 years old, you know, took it to my dad thinking, okay, I just need some startup capital now. And he just didn't see the vision for it. He was like, no, I don't get it. Like, you know, we were going to do it online. You know, the .com thing was like exploding all the way around us. And his brain couldn't get wrapped up around it. Our professors thought it was a great idea. They said we should do it and launch it. And so I just, you know, not having any resources or access to capital back then or anything, I just kind of shelved it. And 2 years later, Torrid opened their first store in the Brea Mall.
Of course.
Yeah. Right.
Yep. Yeah.
And so watching CNN later on with my dad a few years later, he's like, that was your idea. It was like $100 billion market.
Yeah. Thanks, Dad. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We could be watching this TV show in the Bahamas right now. Yeah.
So we just kind of laughed, but, you know, I don't regret it because, you know, instead of doing that, eventually I found my way into the family business. My dad lured me in, and I got to be an entrepreneur. Yeah. For many, many years, right? And grow new divisions and grow new customer categories and, you know, really immerse myself in being an entrepreneur in the family business. And, you know, there was one other business that I started when I was at Easy Flow, and it was when my kids were little. They didn't want to wear their sun protection. So they wouldn't let me put sunscreen on them. And I wanted to put it on their head, but they wouldn't let me. And so I wanted them to wear their hat and they'd take it off. And it was always this fight. And I thought to myself, again, at Disneyland, I had this aha moment where I saw that they would wear costume hats, but they wouldn't wear sun protective hats. So I said, well, it's because the sun protective hats are just boring. So let's make them a costume and trick them.
There you go.
And so I created a company called Tiny Crowns, which is still around today, and it's swimming costumes. So
yeah, I noticed that. I saw that in your bio, or I think on your LinkedIn.
Yeah, and firemen and ninjas and race car drivers, and they all have matching hats. And, you know, I call it a mommy win and that's the name of my LLC. It's like when you can trick your kids into doing something good, that's a hashtag mommy wins. So like I said, I'm an entrepreneur that like sees a need in my own life and then wants to solve it for myself and others.
So how cool are you to your kids and their friends that you've created this brand now that's in 5,000 stores and is pretty much a hit?
I mean, I took them to a big trade show we had here in town this weekend, and I don't think they understood like kind of what I do. You know, they saw me create the product and then they saw it on the shelf. And like, you know, I talked to my husband about this. I'm like, they're just going to think it's normal. Like you just make a product and then it's on the
shelf.
What
everybody does. Right. Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yep. And it to some extent, it is, you know, pretty simple process, but it's hard to get there, you know, to get to that point. So, I mean, they're very involved in the business. And, you know, after that trade show, my youngest one was like, you know, I call dibs on running Unite because she just loved being at the trade show. And,
nice.
You know, they love to watch Shark Tank and analyze it and say, mommy, you wouldn't take that deal, would you? Like, you're going to do all the work and they're going to get all the money. Like, that's not fair. And so really funny to see it through their eyes. But that's actually one of my big motivations is like, you know, modeling entrepreneurship as it was modeled for me, because that is the way it is demystified, you know, because I think all kids think their parents are, you know, at some point you're like, they're not that smart.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They can't be that smart. They're my parents. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And my kids will say that about me. And it's like, and that's what you want. You want it to be accessible. And yes, they're going to see that it's difficult. And yes, they're going to see that you're stressed and whatever, but that's normal.
Yeah.
And it's not like, you know, your parent just goes off and does a job and comes home and you have no idea what that job is.
You mentioned Shark Tank, and I think you and I talked about this back in 2019, either in that conversation or a subsequent conversation. Was that a path that you've considered or that you've tried? Not that you've been on, I know, but I mean, have you auditioned or done any of that?
I have done some of the audition requirements that they've had and just haven't like pursued it since then. Just quite frankly, I've just been like so busy, but I would definitely, I think it's like an amazing vehicle to grow awareness and partnership with like some of the leading business minds. So I'm a big fan of the show.
Yeah, me too. I watch it all the time. And I taught at UC Riverside for 8 years in the sports marketing, sports leadership, and sports finance classes. And usually in my marketing, actually all three classes, I would show excerpts. Most of my students were foreign, so many of them had never seen Shark Tank. And that became a regular in our class. You know, one of the assignments, watch Shark Tank this week and come in and talk about one of the products that you or you wouldn't invest in and why or why not. And that was pretty fun. What kind of lessons as managing director of a plumbing company in Easy Flow for 17 years have been transferable skills into probably many, but are there any that really stand out as transferable skills that have helped you with this launch and now the growth of Unite?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you want to really go far, you have to have a clear vision and be able to relay that vision to the people that will help you get there. And so I think vision setting and having a really meaningful end game or, you know, what is it that you're trying to do aside from profit and money, right? It's really about how does this company help people, help the planet, help others? And so I think I learned that for sure. And just honing my leadership skills in terms of, you know, being able to identify talent early, bring smarter people early, right? Yeah. You want to always be surrounding yourself with people smarter than you, not being intimidated. You know, I saw in my career, there were a lot of times managers were intimidated to hire somebody who they perceived to be more intelligent than them, or even on, you know, or even if they were, you know, they thought that they couldn't retain them and that they would move on. And, you know, my answer was always like, okay, but even if you keep them for a year or two and you get excellent work out of them, mm-hmm. like, you know, it's way better than just having somebody who's under, you know, performing forever.
Right. Oh, yeah. Right? No, if I'm the smartest person in the room, I'm in the wrong room, as they say, right? Right.
So, exactly right.
Yeah, surround yourself with people who know more about things that you don't know about. I look over your shoulder for those that are watching. We're recording this now, but we're going to air it both on our YouTube and at the First Bank site, where the podcast is now sponsored by the First Bank Center for Family-Owned Businesses. So we put all the videos up on our First Bank site. But for those that are listening and don't get to see this, over, I guess, would be your right shoulder. I'm spinning myself around. You've got a shelf full of your products there. Turn around for a minute and just look at that. I know it's not good TV to see the back of your head here. When you look at that, what emotions come up for you when you look at that shelf? Those shelves.
Joy, right? Somebody wrote me an email today and said, like, it's clear that you found your home in this better for you CPG space. And that's really quite true. You know, I can't believe I get to do this for a living. I so enjoy the creative process of creating new flavors, and even like the stuff that's supposed to be frustrating, you know, I enjoy like the problem solving aspect of it. And I feel like I've found my tribe, so to speak. You know, I go to these trade shows and I'm like friends with all these people. And, you know,
I looked at your LinkedIn while you were at that show, and I saw your pictures and I saw comments. And just even when I posted today that I was going to be interviewing you, the likes and comments from people I don't even know. That's so cool. I love that. I totally love that.
It's
I feel the same way. Yeah.
It's such a warm industry because we share customers, right? They could buy my bar and his coffee and her chapstick, and it doesn't matter. We're all in
bar and somebody else's bar. Cause you know,
that's exactly right. Yeah. I always say that. I'm not like afraid of like sharing, because the rising tide raises all ships.
100%. 100%. I use that quote as regularly as I possibly can. And it's so true.
It's so true.
Yeah. So let's go back. Well, take me back to your childhood. You talked about your dad. I met your dad. Take me back to early memories of mentors, dad included, or maybe others that really gave you those skills that you now possess that make you successful in what you're doing.
You know, I think my parents, like, bringing me to America was like a huge moment in the trajectory of my life. Cause I talk to my husband about this all the time. Like, what would have happened if I had grown up in Africa still and like, wouldn't have had these opportunities to be entrepreneurial? Like, would I have been so frustrated, right? Mm. So frustrated. And my dad was always just super hardworking, and I did not see him a lot in my childhood, cause he was always traveling, building his business, super committed to it. He really lacked balance, is what we would call it today. Right. But it was a good example of the grit that it takes, right? And seeing so many obstacles, and then joining him in the business, being a part of that, you know, team to solve issues as they were coming up, and all those things. So I think, you know, that modeling entrepreneurship was really important. But another like key thing that happened in my life was that, you know, my parents switched my school every single year. So I went to 7 different schools by the time I got to high school.
And that was by design, or was that just, what was the, was it
they were
moved,
just
or
either
what was
moving
the
or which, not like the school and shift us. So like literally kindergarten, first grade, second grade, third grade, fourth grade, 2 schools, fifth grade, sixth grade, different schools. Hmm. Right. And so to me, change was normal.
So you've learned to be very adaptable.
I've learned to be friendly. Awesome. Right. I've learned to,
you could have gone the other way. It could have also taught you to just be a recluse and say, well, I can't ever make a friend because I'm going to be moving again. So it's good that you said it the way you said it. You learned to be friendly.
I learned to be friendly and I learned to see the unseen, right? Like, so by the time I got to high school, whoever was new, I befriended, right? Because I wanted them. I knew what that felt like.
You knew what they felt like.
An outsider. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I wanted to welcome them in. So like the principal would always assign me to like go and show the new kids around.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was like the one that was like supposed to welcome them to the school. And to this day, like I've never met a stranger. Hmm. And I think, you know, had not had that experience, I wouldn't have been so open to my surroundings or to people around me or to just being inquisitive about other people. And like, that's my superpower is that people, I'm super curious and people like to tell me stuff.
Yeah. Well, they gravitate towards you. I mean, we have a lot of similar friends that we met through Cal State Fullerton, through the Center for Family Business. Yeah. I know Jenny and Katie and Deanne and Pam and Sonny and your whole clan there. They're, you know, these are your close friends and my close friends. And I know the admiration and love that they have for you and the joy that they have in your success, just as you have joy in theirs. It's exactly gotta be, right. it's pretty cool to talk to people about you. And when I mention to people, I'm going to be interviewing you, that the reaction that I get, because they're excited for the journey that you're on and the successes that you've had.
I think a lot of people can identify with me. Yeah. Right. And so I think, you know, my journey is not like a special one. It's just that I saw a need, like many people see needs. Right. And they saw me execute on it in real time.
Yeah.
You know, through small steps and then bigger steps and then bigger steps. Right. And so I think a lot of people can see themselves reflected in me. And I love that because like, that's what Unite is about. Like, I want to bring everybody together. I want to demystify it all. And I want to show that women can succeed.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's, I was thinking about that a second ago. The difference between you and many others is many have ideas. Many take it through a business plan. Many even probably get it to funding. And the difference is you did it, or you're doing it.
You just do it one step at a time. I actually don't believe in business plans anymore.
Yeah, no, I'm sort of that way as well. You know, build the plane while you're flying it.
Totally. And I think you should have growth hypothesis, and like you should have marketing plans and, you know, an idea about like how you're going to like actually get that product moving. But really like the business, like if I had written a business plan and I launched my business in March of 2020, like would I have been able to execute on any of it? Like, no. It would have been a tremendous waste of time.
Imagine if you waited 2 weeks from when you did, you might've stopped.
Right.
Yeah. No, I know. I look at, I don't want to make this a COVID conversation because it'd be easy to do that with every podcast, but you grew this thing. I'm going to state the obvious for a minute, but for those that are just like tuning, they're listening for the last 30 minutes, but now they're really tuning in. You grew this thing from below ground zero to now 5,000 plus stores during COVID. It makes me laugh to think of that. I mean, I look at the things that I've been able to accomplish in the last 3 years with, you know, my career, and I'm blown away by it. But I look at, I didn't build a business in the last 3 years. You have. Does that just boggle your mind when you think about it?
It really does when I stop to think about it. Like, I was just talking to my husband about this the other day. It's like, I'm so busy going on to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing that like, I haven't looked backwards yet. Mm. And like taken that exhale and said like, wow, like what have we just done? Like, you know, because you're just busy implementing and moving the business forward. But what was amazing is that I built the business without ever getting on a plane. Right. And I got to build it at home on Zoom.
Wow.
And so you had to bring an extra level of energy to a buyer meeting. But, you know, people understood our mission and they understood that I could execute on it and I could give them. You know, I wasn't like a 20-something year old founder. I had already run a successful business. I knew how to execute. I knew how to, you know, we distributed 8,000 products, like 3 products, no big deal.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Like, yeah. 3 SKUs. Come on. I can do that in my sleep.
Right.
Let me do that while I'm watching TV.
I think the hardest part was, you know, not being an outsider from the food industry. I didn't know anybody in the food space, not one person. I'd never been to a, you know, exhibited at a trade show. The year before was my first year and I had walked in and I'd started to meet people, but I didn't have anybody to ask for advice or how do I do this or how do I move this forward? So it was really just like gut instinct. And, you know, we were very lucky that one of our earliest accounts was Walmart and that gave us national distribution and great brand credibility and brand awareness. And so, you know, people to have a bias towards, I think when they hear it's a food company, they're, you know, there's kind of like this, oh, that's so sweet. Like, do you make it in your kitchen? Yeah. And you go, oh no, actually, it's sold at Walmart. Have you heard of them?
Yeah. Yeah. The little, you know, multi hundreds of billions of dollars, only the largest company on the planet. Yeah.
So it just, you know, it's kind of like a slap back because, or a clap back because, you know, there is a lot of like, I don't know, like prejudice, like, oh, well, you know, who are you? And you don't have any credibility when you start out. And so when the world's largest retailer says, we believe in you, we believe in your story, and we're going to put you on our shelf, that's tremendously uplifting and empowering and just really opens the doors to a lot of other conversations. And so that was not I mean, to me, that's like a God thing, and God moved to make all that happen. There's no reasonable explanation that any of my trajectory should be the way that it is. It really has been like so quick. And so other founders ask me all the time, like, how did you do that? And, you know, I just, you know, there isn't a formula. You just have to make a product you really believe in and that the market really likes. And so then it's easy.
Talk about the day before the call or the email or the notification from Walmart, the day of and the days after when you found out they were going to be putting your product on their shelves.
I just remember calling my CFO and just crying tears of like immense gratitude. And we were like, oh my gosh, you know,
now how do we do this?
It was so, no, we had a plan. We knew how we would do it, but it was so validating.
Yeah.
Right. And you know, they don't tell you, it's like months before you know whether or not you're in or not. And so it really, you know, it felt like a defining moment, and it really was, but it felt like it was, and I wasn't going to fail, and I was going to, you know, make sure it was on time and in full and all the things that, you know, the merchant had put his trust in me, and I wasn't going to let him down. And so, I mean, there were definitely obstacles for a launch, but you know, in the 2 years we've had that business, we've never had a back order. We've never been out of stock through the entire supply chain challenges of the past 2 years. And that's because good planning and investing in the business and inventory and just like being able to read the tea leaves early.
I remember when I bought my first box and it arrived at my doorstep and I opened it up, and not only was I excited to see the colorfulness of the product and the labeling, everything, but I got a personal note from you in that box. That I still have that note, by the way. I get emotional just thinking about your success and thinking about that. It's been such a joy for me to watch you on this journey, just to see you and just getting started. And, you know, we celebrate our friends and their successes. And it's just, and I've been watching, as I mentioned earlier, the friends that you and I share and the friendship and the love and the bond that I feel with you and your success and knowing your husband and knowing that he left his job with the Clippers, high paying, high level VP job with the Clippers to come work with you and run the family business. And now you've got the kids saying, I get to run Unite. I mean, this is why I do what I do. This is why I get emotional, because this is exactly why I do what I do in working with family businesses. But to have, you're one of the few family businesses where I've seen from the beginning, and this is pretty darn cool. So
thank you so much. That really means a lot to me. We're definitely executing in real life and in real time. And, you know, I think it was being around so many family business people and seeing the good that family business can do that made me want to start my own family business and really involve the kids and make them a part of it, because it's an education that's priceless. And it gives you such confidence when you know how business works already from like a young age.
Yeah. What's a day in the life like now for you? You wake up at when, you go to bed when, and what do you, I mean, I know no 2 days are alike. I get it. But
is it like an ideal day?
Well, between balancing being Clara the wife, Clara the mom, Clara the PTA, you know, Clara the soccer mom, all the things you got to do. And oh, by the way, you're running this business that's in Walmart among 5,000 other stores. Yeah, what is your life now like now compared to what maybe prior to COVID?
There's a lot more flexibility because, you know, I get to design my life now. You know, there aren't hundreds of employees depending on you and all these other things. There's a lot more autonomy and flexibility, and we have great people around us and supporting us. So, you know, I try to delegate as much as I can to like our partners and, you know, bring the smartest people. So to really free me up to work on the strategy and execution of our business. But a day in life, wake up, I don't know, somewhere around 7 a.m., get the kids ready, get myself ready, school drop-offs, and then, you know, get to my desk probably by 8:30 and take meetings. And, you know, I'm a SKU mentor. I mentor people. I get mentored. There's a whole bunch of different types of meetings, whether I'm meeting with our brokers or, you know, a new marketing company. You know, I'm always like, I take a lot of meetings to like learn about what's going on in our industry and networking. And so that's a pretty full day. I try to be done by 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
And then if I can, I play a tennis match with my friends later on that night, you know, or, you know, come home, either cook dinner or order something, but like hang out with the girls for a little bit and then kind of just do it again. So I love to play tennis when I can. I'm a competitive tennis player. Like I played this morning for an hour and a half at 8 a.m. And so, you know, got to work by 9:30, but everything can be arranged now.
Yeah. The term work-life balance that you heard so much before COVID, I think has shifted into work-life rhythm. And I don't know if that was related to COVID or if that's where we'd be anyway, if COVID didn't happen. I don't think so. I think that we've all shifted into it's 2 p.m. and I might be at a, you know, lunch with a friend that's unrelated to work, or 4 p.m. I might be at Little League practice, but at 9 p.m. I'm working and I'm talking to Tokyo, or at 6 a.m. I'm talking to New York. So it's just.
Well, as a person who didn't have balance for many years, like 17 years at Easy Flow, it was such a fast-paced growth environment, and like, you know, I never even took a maternity leave. Right, I was just like literally would be back at work and traveling.
I remember that. I remember your last child, when you had your child, and how quickly you got back to work. I'd forgotten about that, but I do remember. Yeah. I was like, wait, you're at work already? That wasn't that just last week, Clara?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was on planes when they were like 6 weeks old, like traveling to see customers, and just never thought I could take a break, or never thought that I could, which was a complete fallacy, and it really did myself a disservice. And one of my big regrets, because I feel like it set up the other women around me to feel like they could not take a break. And nothing could be further from the truth. But I just remember one time, it was like a very surreal experience of like, I was trying to nurse the baby, I was trying to work a PowerPoint and be on a call all at the same time. And I had almost this out of body experience. Like, what are you doing? Like, this is not the way it's supposed to be. Like, you're not doing anything well, you're failing at all three things. And just learning now, like just with wisdom and age, that it's okay to stop. And like, for me, if I'm not in nature at least a little bit every day, it really stifles my creativity, and it really stifles like everything around me. So it's not even like a nice to have to be able to play tennis. Like, I need to do it.
Right.
It makes me a better worker, a better mom, a better everything.
Yeah. Yeah. I work from home most of the time, and you know, we built this house a little over under 2 years ago, and we built out a little patio out in the front right outside my office. And every now and then, right now it's raining, for those that, you know, when we're recording this, it's raining outside, but I'll just go outside and just sit out front and just close my eyes and put my face up so the sun can hit it for 15 or 20 minutes every now and then, not doing anything, and leave the phone in here. I can't be reached, you know, and I don't even go to my wife, hey, I'm going to be outside. I just go sit out front and just get some sun just to get outside. I'm like, yeah. And for me, it's whether it's nature or whatever, it's just that sanity break that I think we all need to take every day. So you've launched 2 new products. What's your R&D? I won't even call it process, but I mean, are you constantly looking at and trying new flavors, new ideas? You're just at this food show, probably tasting some things that you're thinking, this might make a nice bar. I mean, what's that like?
Oh, I'm always dreaming up new flavors, and I have like a running list in my head, but also we invite our community to co-create with us. And so on the back of every wrapper, whoever would like to nominate a flavor can email hello@unitefood.com. And like those emails come to me, and I love to, you know, interact. And like the best emails are when people write me and say, thank you for seeing us. Thank you for making a flavor that we can relate to. And so that makes me super happy. But yeah, R&D, I think for most CPG brands, happens in a lab with a team of 30 R&D scientists who are optimizing for cost and nutrition and all the other random things. And they're trying to hit a target price point, and they're trying to, you know, hit a target customer, and they've got this like elaborate plan.
Yeah.
For me, it's like, yes, because I'm not a food outsider, and because I want to formulate something that I want to eat and I want to feed my kids, like I formulated my kitchen, right? Like that's the first step. It's back to the Cuisinart.
Yeah,
and
there
like,
you go.
What would I put in my bar, and like, how would I flavor it? And, you know, I think early on when we launched this 3 years ago, people did not get it. They did not understand what we were doing, and global flavors were not trending. Now it's a little bit easier to have those conversations because you go to a show like Expo West and there's like global flavors everywhere in so many different categories. But even like I had a buyer come up to me that just last week at this show, and he said, Clara, do you remember me? And I didn't remember him. And he was a buyer for a large chain of convenience stores. And he said, you know, you reached out and sent me samples like 3 years ago, and you know, I just didn't get it. I didn't get what you were doing. I didn't get what the product was all about. And I just want to tell you, I've never been more wrong about a brand in 34 years of doing this.
Wow.
I've never been more wrong.
That's big.
And I use you as a case study. And it was humbling that he would like take his time to come and tell me that. And it meant so much to me. But I think when you're the first to do something, it's hard for people to see the vision.
Right.
And so I'm sure, you know, there'll be a lot of Me Too products, but you know, that's the world that we live in. And it's like, there's no patent around flavor.
You didn't invent Mexican hot chocolate. Sure.
No. Yeah. Right. And for others, it'd probably be a gimmick, but for me, it'll be authentic and it's our mission. And like that, you can't replicate. Like, they can't replicate why we do it and why, you know, and the deep place it comes from. And, you know, I'm not after like, yes, I want to be successful. And yes, I want to build this into like a household name, but it's not the profits that drive me. It's really the mission of like bringing more people into wellness, like improving the lives of many more people. Because, you know, just as I've seen in my family business, like you can work really hard, have the great exit, and some people will still not be happy. Right. Yep. And so you have to be happy the whole time.
Yeah.
Right. You have to really enjoy your work.
Yeah. I can't remember where it was just recently on a show. I heard the common phrase, money can't buy happiness, but then the person next said, and happiness can't buy money, you know? And I really like that, because it's like, sometimes we think, well, when I get happy, that's when I'll get successful, or when I'm successful, that's when I'll be happy. But money and happiness, from just about everybody I know, and I know a lot of wealthy people, I work with family businesses, and there's a lot of wealth in our clientele and the people that we work with, but it's not the money that makes them happy. It's the purpose. It's the relationship. It's the purpose. It's the impact.
It's the quality of the relationships and the quality of the people.
100%. Yeah. I know people making $20,000 a year that are happier than some billionaires I know, because they feel like they're living in an impact society rather than in a profitability and materialistic society. I love on your website, the acronym UNITE. I think of UNITE and I just think of inclusion, and I think of the United States, and I think of unification and everything. And sure, that's part of it, of course. But talk about the acronym, understand, nourish, invite, try new things, exceed expectations. Where did that come from?
So
it the name, and then you decided to put those terms to it? Or was it UNITE because of those terms, or kind of a little of both?
A little bit of both, for sure. Like the naming was really hard. Naming is hard. You know, when you're trying to figure out what it is you're trying to convey before you have a customer base, before you know who your end customer is, all those things, that I was really stumped on what I should call the bar. And I had a list of all these names, right? And post-its all over the house. And, you know, at the end of the day, it boiled down to like, what am I really trying to do? And that was to unite people. And I'm a big believer in casting vision of like, who does our company, what are the core values, and setting core values early of like, what is going to define us. And so I thought it'd be great to put core values towards, you know, in our letters so that it'd be memorable. And it fit, right? Yeah. It was our core values, right? Yeah. Like you seek first to understand. I think a lot of times people think unite means you have to like forego your own beliefs. You don't have to forego your beliefs. You just have to seek to like be open to changing your mind.
Listen, hello@unite.com, right? People are able to reach out to you and you're listening for these food ideas, these flavor ideas.
And to listen to the other side, you know, you don't have to like hate somebody just because they don't believe like you do. You can just love them and both be okay. You know, the nourish, like nourishing people is key to what we're doing here, right? Yeah. It's not going to be full of junk. And, you know, we're always going to like, we use really high quality ingredients. We're a premium bar, right? But we are also want to be accessible. So that comes with trade-offs. It's really hard to, you know, compete with a dollar bar when you know that they're using a bunch of junk.
Sure.
Right.
And it's not a candy bar. The flavors might sound like candy bars, but they're not candy bars.
Right. And then like this idea of inviting people in, right. We want to, you know, invite people and listen to their stories, and we always want to be iterating and trying new things. So it's not like getting stagnant and like, you know, we have a formula and now we're just going to win it.
Yeah.
And then the exceeding expectations. I think it's really important to like exceed not just your customers' expectations, your shareholder expectations, because profitable, good, well-run companies make more impact.
Yeah.
Right. You can't have impact if you're not running a healthy business.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So it's, it kind
those
of
that are not healthy are not in business anymore. So,
right.
Yeah. And we saw a lot of that in the last 3 years too. So.
Well, and in the food space, it was like, lose as much money as you can, just grow sales, right? It was very much like tech. And I came into the space, I was like, what?
Yeah.
Like,
what do you how does that work, lose? Right? Yeah, how do we
That's
pay the
not
bills?
How you run a- yeah, it was just, again, being naive, you know, just really coming back to that and being like, okay, that's not how I'm going to run my business. And so really always focusing on profitability.
One thing I know about you is your humility. So I don't think you're going to have an issue answering this question. What's a big mistake that you made in the last 3 years in this process that taught that, that A, taught you, and B, could teach someone else who's watching or listening today?
I like the one that I'm working on this year, and I've really just come to realize is I seem to need a lot of like external validation, whether it's like being the good student and like getting the A+ or all those things. And when you go into a field where you don't know anybody and you don't know a lot of things, you kind of are looking for experts to fill in your knowledge gaps. And I realized that my instincts were better than the so-called experts, right? So it's really about honing in on my instincts. And every time I've gone against my instincts, I failed, right? Mm-hmm. And I've known like gut instinct, like I shouldn't do this deal. I'm not going to do this deal. But then, you know, you allow somebody to say, no, you really want this deal. You really want this customer. And to me, those are some of like the most painful mistakes is when you shy away from that. But aside from that, I think really mistakes come when you might not really understand the full implication of a decision. So just, you know, seeking wise counsel always in terms mm-hmm. of, you know, seeking out people that might know the answer. And that might contradict the instincts part, but it's both.
Yeah. Well, your instinct right? tells you to just reach for outside help.
Yeah. And validate, right? Yeah. And validate what you're trying to do. And so I've I'm happy that like I'm in an industry where lots of people share information and knowledge. And like that's very unique.
Yeah. So what are your goals? You, the business student in you, the BHAG, what are those big, hairy, audacious goals? You've launched the brand. You're in 5,000 plus stores. You're now up to 5 SKUs. You're nationwide. You've built this business that's obviously supporting the family because you and your husband are doing it together, which is remarkable in 3 years that you've been able to do that. But what's out there? What's on the horizon for you that you can share?
You know, I want Unite to be a household name. I want Unite to stand for the company that is about seeing people and welcoming them in to every kind of category that we decide to go into, right? And being like kind of the people and for the people. And I want to be a resource and like have a fund that invests in women and, you know, underrepresented populations and really grow the next generation. You know, I'm going to have this like unique experience of being an operator myself. And so I think a lot of private equity or venture capital money, they're not necessarily operators. They're more like financial people who, you know, just look at numbers and they're very good at it. Not that they're bad, but, mm-hmm. you know, I want to have that like unique experience of like capital and operational experience that I think will be like a superpower for helping and accelerating brands that want to be better for people, better for the planet, better for nutrition.
All right. I'm going Shark Tank on you here for a minute.
Okay.
All right. So let's say you're on Shark Tank. I'm Mark Cuban or one of the sharks. I like them all. And I'm addicted to the show, by the way, as are you. If you don't tell me the dollar figure or the percentage, but if you were asking for a deal and there were a dollar figure out there, the question they'll often ask you, and I'm going to ask you, is if you got that money, what would you do with it? What's the need that you have out there that the money, if you were on Shark Tank, what would you use it for?
It's really building brand awareness. So it's very expensive to educate customers about who you are. You know, getting on shelf isn't enough because mm-hmm. people still don't know who you are. They have to be enticed.
It's a crowded space. It's a very crowded space.
Very, very crowded space.
It's a small right? product and there's thousands of them on every bar and every grocery store. So yeah.
So your packaging has to work overtime for you. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's one thing that we did well, right? We had great packaging made and it's eye-catching, but it's really building that brand awareness. You know, so many brands just burn a lot of cash building brand awareness with like expensive marketing. And again, going back to like my core value of running a profitable company, like that contradicts, right, who I am, yeah, or how I want to build. So the answer is to build it slowly and like get as much trial as you can and try to get as many people to try it. But we are the fastest growing brand in the natural channel and one of the top five fastest growing brands nationally. And so we're well on our way to hopefully.
Did you just hear yourself when you said that, by the way?
What do you mean?
Did you just hear those numbers? Fastest growing, top five, fastest growing. Yeah, have you heard yourself?
I know it's weird to say, but it's, you know, it's just all compounds, right? And so like, it's like gets that flywheel going and, you know, the reception that we had at this world's largest trade show for natural products. I mean, I think there was almost 100,000 people there and 3,000 exhibitors and, you know, the excitement around the brand and about the product and watching people try it and their face lights up. Like, that's what I want more of. Like, I'm addicted to that. I'm addicted to like making people happy and, you know, having great fun flavors and being like really an innovator and leader in flavor.
I had an opportunity to interview Kara Golden, the founder of Hint Water, on the podcast early on, and, you know, later in the game than you are in yours, but still early enough on. And there's been a lot of growth since. Very similar story, very similar, making it in the house and, you know, that the coolness factor of it now, the uniqueness of it. And, you know, we always have, I'm kind of mad at myself that I didn't bring my bottle of Hint Water in here with me, not as a, you know, to show it on screen, but it's certainly something that I drink very regularly, just like I have the Unite bar as well.
I'm a very big fan of Kara. We're actually friends. And so, you know, it's, we have, I've like definitely looked up to her, read her book. She is an amazing human. Yeah. And that's the thing about food is like, you can innovate it in your kitchen, right? Yeah. It's not like a plumbing supply line. Like, I can't go build one in my garage. Right. But I can innovate in my kitchen.
Yeah.
And you can tinker around with it.
My wife makes some things that are unique to her that, you know, if we had the idea of making it into a business, she probably could.
Yeah. So,
yep. Bought her one of those KitchenAid mixers for Christmas, actually. So I'm going to have to leave after this podcast, go out to the kitchen and say, let's invent something here. Let's just start throwing stuff in. And who knows? Maybe we'll be the next Unite food product.
There you go.
So if I don't go to Walmart because it's not near me, which that's hard to believe because they're everywhere. But if I'm looking for your product elsewhere besides Walmart, where else might I find it?
Well, definitely check our store locator to find, you know, we have lots of even small mom and pop stores, but the larger stores are Sprouts here in California in the Southwest. We're also in Albertsons, Safeway. We will be launching into Target, HEB. We're at the Fresh Market. We're at Meijer. I don't know where your listeners all are, but the best way is check our store locator or find us on Amazon and on our website, unitefood.com.
I was going to just go take people there. How can they reach you? Unitefood.com.
Yeah.
Any other ways they can reach you? Social media, things of that nature.
Yeah. I mean, you can reach me.
Accessible, obviously.
Yeah. You can send me an email. hello@unitefood.com. Happy to chat. Yeah. But we are, you know, definitely a brand that welcomes different viewpoints.
Two last questions. I know we both have somewhere to be in the next couple of minutes. The first question is just, you've already hit on it, I think, in the last hour, but if I were just to ask you, Kara, what your, or Clara, sorry, we said Kara Golden and now.
That's a great Freudian slip. I like it.
Yeah, yeah, Kara, Clara, you know, I'll have to let her know. What are you most proud of in this journey of the last 3 years? If you could pinpoint one thing that you just think, man, I'm on an elevator with you for 30 seconds and I ask you the question, what are you most proud of over this journey? What would you say?
I'm no longer scared, right? I don't let fear define me. Nothing really scares me. I just know everything can be dealt with and figured out. And so I think that deep peace comes from like the place of surrender that I'm in of like, this is, you know, I always tell people like God told me to start this company and it's his business and wherever he wants to take it is fine with me. And like, you know, really living kind of like open-handed and saying like, you know, a prayer that I always pray is like, God, if it's for me, please open the door. But if it's not, please shut it and shut it so tight that I can't even open it. Right. And so just nothing kind of can get to you if you know that everything's happening for you. So I'm no longer afraid of anything. And so it just, I think there's so much fear and anxiety around starting a business, but I don't struggle with that.
Awesome. Okay. So you sort of answered the question, but I'm going to take this last question about a foot down from the brain. And I'm just going to finish with this and give you the final word on this podcast today. Clara, What's in your heart?
I want to help as many people as I can. Like, you know, we, with the exit of my family business, we were able to start a philanthropic fund. And gosh, we've been able to like deploy some of those funds recently. And knowing how much of an impact they can make, looking backwards, like every bad day at work was worth it. Like it all becomes so crystal clear. Like every bad, terrible thing that happened in the course of running a business was worth it so that you can get to this point. And I just want, you know, my uncle was trying to get me to run for politics. And I was like, no, I can have way more impact running a business that's successful than I can running for politics and asking for money. I'd rather be generating money and giving it to people who can make a big impact. And so, I, you know, all of it lines up to that. Like now I'm aligned with a great charity called Convoy of Hope. We don't, you know, our bars have made it all the way to the Ukraine and San Jose and around the corner and around the world. And so really just seeing their capital efficiency and what they can do just makes me want to do more and work harder so that more people can be fed and empowered.